animal he was. Tiger. Hope he's not too much of a tiger in class. So it's time for us to get started. Before we do, we'll have a word of prayer. And I've asked Travis to lead us in that this morning. So we'll get started. Wrong button. So we went over this last time. I'm probably going to go over it a few more times because I think it's good for us to hopefully memorize it if we haven't. So just looking at the timeline and where we're at, today we're about 2000, right? When we go back in time, Christ was approximately zero, and then David would have been around what time? Around 1,000. And then we have Moses would have been around 1,500, and then Abraham would have been 2,000, another 500 years, and then the flood, 2,500, and then Adam and Eve. Around 4,000, right? So 6,000 years ago. So again, we're in this time frame right here, the very beginning of or a little past the 2,000 year mark. So that's where we're at. So last week, if you were here, we started in chapter 25, and we talked about stuff. Let me find my notes. We talked about... We got down to about question number 4. So, if you remember, question 4 was, when Rebecca had difficulties while carrying her children, what did she do? And what did we say that she did? She went to God, right? She went to God and she prayed, why is it this way with me? And what was the answer that she was told? So there's two nations inside you. So there are two nations inside you. That's why it is the way that it is with you. And what about those two nations? The one's going to be stronger than the other. And one's going to serve the other. Who's going to serve the other? The elder is going to serve the younger. Would that have been significant? That would have been unusual at this time, right? Today, do we have that same society? Peyton, are you special? You are. But it's different today, right? It isn't quite, I don't think we fully understand, like when we're going to get into the birthright and those things, what that meant to them, how things were different for them than it is for us today. But she was told that there are two nations in you, the one's going to serve the other, and the younger is going to be the master, if you will. And we pointed out that this was the first time that twins are mentioned in the Bible. It's the first time that we have any mention of twins at all that I could find in the Bible. So that may be why she was saying, what's happening? It probably was a difficult thing. I mean, how many... Has anyone here had twins? I'm a twin. So my mom had twins. I haven't had twins. But my mom did. And it's a different feeling than when you just have one. So things are probably a little different for her here. But they're the first twins mentioned in the Bible. And I didn't have a question for this, but describe their birth. When they're born, how did that happen? Well, that's a bad question. Describe what was unusual. Okay, yeah, the reaching out of the hand. So you've got Esau's born first, and what's known about him? He's red and hairy. Okay. Have you ever seen a hairy baby? Yeah. People are pointing. But there are babies that have more hair than others, right? Even body hair. But what was unusual was when Jacob came, what was he doing? Holding his heel. Okay, would that have been usual? Well, it's the first set of twins, so who knows. But just looking at some notes regarding twins. Okay, the average time between birth of the first and second baby is 17 minutes. The longest one is like 12 hours or, I know, multiple days, now that I think about it. But 17 minutes is average. Usually it's within the hour, I think. Okay. The fastest ever recorded interval was 22.976 seconds. And I want to know who was running that clock at a birth, because that's pretty precise. They must Olympic time. But so the shortest time that's recorded is 23 seconds, which is still pretty fast, right? I know when my mom, Jennifer and I, not this Jennifer, of course, Jennifer, my sister, we were 4 minutes apart, and that was pretty fast. But to be born with one holding the heel, is that true? Does that mean it's not true? It's incredible, though, right? It's incredible how close together they were. I just thought it was interesting when you're thinking about twins. Mike. So Jacob was even struggling within the womb, wanted to be first, if you will, right? Coming out, grabbing hold of the heel. Yeah, good point. So anything else on their birth before we just look at them in general? Okay, so we'll look at them in general. I said compare and contrast Jacob and Esau. What did you have as far as similarities, differences? We already mentioned who was the firstborn, Esau. So that would have been Jacob was the secondborn. Okay. What are some other differences? Esau's hairy, Jacob's smooth. We're going to see Jacob's smoothness later. These are not just traits that happened at birth where Esau was hairy and then all the hair fell off and he was normal. He's going to be a hairy guy. What about their names? Do their names mean anything? Esau? It's a hairy one. And Jacob is a heel holder, supplanter. So that came from their birth, right? What do we know later in life about them? Esau was an outdoorsman. He liked to hunt. He was a man of the field. What about Jacob?
If they had video games, that's what he'd been doing.
He was a quiet man.
Dwelt
in the tents. So he was a homebody, if you will. He wouldn't have been out there hunting. And we see that later, right? Esau's out hunting. What's Jacob doing? He's cooking. Okay. Not that it's not manly to cook, because Esau cooks too. But anyway.
So, I mean, from later actions, I think we can conclude that Esau seems to be more impulsive, where Jacob seems to be more like the thinker type, the planning, doing things ahead of time.
Okay. So Esau was more impulsive, and we're definitely going to see that later. And Jacob is more of the schemer, more of the thinker. Obviously, we already mentioned Esau's going to serve Jacob, so Jacob's going to rule over Esau. And then there's one other difference that I noted with them. What's one other difference? Mike. Yep, that's exactly what I had. The father loved him, and the mother loved Jacob. So, does that make sense to you? Again, I don't want to stereotype dads, but what do you want as a dad? You want a manly boy, or do you want a little homebody? So he liked the stew that he fixed for him. He liked the game that he caught. he liked what Esau gave him, what he presented him. And if you think about it, I'm not going to speak for men. I'm going to speak for me. If I could have a son who's 6'3", 220 pounds, would I pick that or a son who's 4'11", 120? Exactly. But if I had a choice, what would I wish for my son?
You don't have a choice.
Okay. This is not going how I envisioned it. Actually, I didn't envision it. I made it up on the spot, and that was probably the mistake. But, Kurt. So the fact that this happens, the father loved Esau and the mother loved Jacob, that's not going to be a good thing, is it? That's going to cause problems down the road. So, yes, we shouldn't think that way. We should love them equally. Do people sometimes have favorites? I am not answering, and neither of them are here. So... Excellent point. Find a way to make a relationship with your child, even the one who doesn't necessarily like the things you like. Good point. So we shouldn't have the favoritism that they did, and we're going to see later how that does cause a problem. But it is something that was definitely true in this family. it definitely causes issues for them. And I was the favorite growing up. So, not because I deserved it, but because I was, this really sounds bad on my parents, because I was the only boy. I'll leave it at that. So question six, what did Jacob pay for the bowl of stew and why? So let's look at that. First of all, let's set the scene. Where is Esau? He's out hunting, right? And where's Jacob? Jacob's at home, or in his tent, or out. I don't know that it says that. He's not out hunting. Okay. So what did he pay? We'll just go ahead and read the section here. Jacob boiled stew. Esau came from the field, and he was famished. Esau said to Jacob, "Please feed me some of that red stew, for I am famished." Therefore, his name was called Edom. Jacob said, "First, sell me your birthright." Esau said, "Behold, I am about to die. What good is the birthright to me?" Jacob said, "Swear to me first." He swore to him. He sold his birthright to Jacob. Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew. He ate and drank, rose up, and went his way. So Esau despised his birthright. So what did he pay for the bowl of stew? What did he pay? His birthright. Okay. So he paid his birthright. What is a birthright? What was the birthright? Okay, I deleted a slide somehow. So in Deuteronomy 21, we see that it's a double portion. So I had the slide up there, but somehow I deleted it. But in Deuteronomy 21, verse 15, here it's telling him that you can't have favorites, basically. But Deuteronomy 21:15, that's not the right verse either. Oh, yeah, it is. Okay, Deuteronomy 21:15. If a man has two wives, the one loved and the other unloved, and both the loved and the unloved have borne him children, and if the firstborn son belongs to the unloved, then on the day when he assigns his possessions as an inheritance to his sons, he may not treat the son of the loved as the firstborn in preference to the son of the unloved, who is the firstborn. But he shall acknowledge the firstborn, the son of the unloved, by giving him a double portion of all that he has. For he is the first fruits of his strength. The right of the firstborn is his. So there in Deuteronomy, it's talking about the right of the firstborn, and they would get a double portion. Interesting enough, though, it also talked about not playing favorites in that verse, which we see happening. But so the double portion is basically a double portion. So does that mean he got double? We need Anthony. Do math. Not necessarily. A double portion, right? So if it's just Nathan and Ben, sorry, he gets a double portion. He gets twice as much as you, right? Now, if it's Henry and Levi and Clayton, how much does Clayton get? Not Clayton. Henry get? Two-fourths. Wait a minute. I'm sorry? Double what any of the others get. That was bad. That doesn't work out either, does it? Because it still comes out. So if you had four. Okay. So it isn't just double. It's just like they were two people. Right? It's not they get half. They get as if they were two people.
I know we usually don't talk about this, but I've got to believe that with what you receive also comes some familial responsibility.
Okay. So was it just a double portion? Is it just a double portion of all the stuff? Or was there more to it than this?
Ongoing role and right and privilege and responsibility.
Okay. So according to what I've read, the birthright consisted of the double portion of the father's inheritance, but also with the patriarchs, it indicated chieftainship, responsibility, the rule over the brethren, over the family. They were going to be the patriarch. The title of the blessing in this case, which would have been the promises that were made to Abraham, right? The land and the great nation. And Jacob knew what this was. He knew what the birthright meant, right? Did Esau? Sure he did. Esau knew. He knew. But I don't think he cared as much. Now, it is interesting when you look in chapter 27, when we get to it later with the blessing, Esau is going to complain that he's stolen from me twice, almost as if the blessing and the inheritance were separate. But I think that was just a culmination of what's happening here, right? He's got it, and now he's going to get it. I mean, we have the whole Jan Brady syndrome, right, where you don't want to be the middle child. You want to be the oldest or the young cute one. But so we don't have it codified more like they do, right? But in this case, that was what it was. The oldest was supposed to get extra. We're going to see that in Deuteronomy. I don't think God has mentioned that this is how it should be. But in Deuteronomy, we see that's how it was codified. So I think it was just something that was done then. So he gave up more than just twice his father's goods, which would have been a lot, right? I mean, giving up even that double portion would have been a lot. So why did he pay it? Why did he give it up? He was famished. And I'm about to die. Ultimately, because he despised his birthright, right? So when he came in, do you think he was famished? I bet he was hungry. Was he about to die? He says he was. But what type of man did we say he was? He's a man of the field. Is he going to, a man of the field, going to stay out there until he's about dead and just drag himself home? That doesn't seem likely to me. Is it possible? Sure. Maybe he was about to die, and that's not going to do me any good, but I think he's exaggerating here. I think, I'm about to die. I think he's just being impetuous. He's looking at the carnal, he's looking at now. Forget about the future. I'm hungry. That looks good. So he requested it, or he didn't request it. He just wanted some soup or some stew. And then Jacob again, living up to his namesake, I'll give it to you for your birthright. And he goes along with it because it says he despised his birthright. So he despised it. Why did he despise it? Because of the type of man he was, right? So we can look and we can read more about him in Hebrews. Follow after peace with all men, and the sanctification without which no man will see the Lord, looking carefully lest there be any man who falls short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and many be defiled by it, lest there be any sexual immoral person or profane person like Esau, who sold his birthright for one meal. So why did he sell it? Because it was his character. He didn't value it. Scott? Good contrast. I mean, Christ's 40 days. He was famished. But yet when he could have had bread, he chose not to. Right. Good point. So it's just the type of person he was. He was a profane person. Now here I see it lumps him in with, lest there be any sexual immoral person or profane person like Esau. So the question then becomes, is that sexually immoral? Is that applying to Esau too? Or is it just the profane part? And that's how I viewed it as well. Some of the commentators would say, no, Esau was sexually immoral. He had those two Canaanite wives, and who knows what else he might have had. So they want to make him as sexually immoral. I don't think this is what that's saying, but he's a profane person, so it could have been. We don't know. But I think it's a stretch to make this say that. But it was definitely his character that he was a profane man. And he didn't value his birthright. Yes?
I think it's a contrast in the Bible between Jacob and Esau. Jacob does for Esau, does for Canaanite women. He talks about the Abraham's doing that. And so he sends Jacob to the family. So I'm not saying that Esau was sexually immoral, but kind of like what Mason said, he chose things that were not setting him up to have that part of the covenant.
Right. And we're going to see why Esau took those wives. It wasn't because he loved them necessarily. It was spite. Right? I mean, again, it goes back to who he was. So what was God's opinion on what of Jacob and Esau? In Romans 9:13, even as it is written, Jacob I have loved, but Esau I have hated. So where was that written? That was written in Malachi. A revelation Yahweh's word to Israel by Malachi, I have loved you, says Yahweh, yet you say, how have you loved us? Wasn't Esau Jacob's brother, says Yahweh, yet I loved Jacob. But Esau I hated and made his mountain a desolation and his heritage to the jackals of the wilderness. So God recognized the difference between Jacob and Esau. And God had respect for Jacob. He loved Jacob. But it says he hated Esau. So any other... Mason?
Well, I guess my thought is that Jacob is not admirable in this story. There's not a good guy in the story. And so we have highlighted the problem with Esau and the analogy for us.
Good point. Yeah, lest we say Jacob's the hero in this story. What did Jacob do? He took advantage of his brother. Now, maybe his brother, if his brother was about to die, he really took advantage of him, because who wouldn't give your starving brother a bowl of stew? But even going on the premise that, yeah, it wasn't as bad as Esau was making out, does that still make Jacob a good guy? How can I manipulate my brother? So we need to be not like Jacob, right? So I'll use an example. So I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it because it made me look good. That's just something. The first one that came to my head. So when I bought Conrad's car, I bought it from an Indian gentleman who was leaving the country the next day. He had to be on a flight by 9. We bought it at like 4 or 5. I got a good deal, but I didn't get a great deal. I could have got a great deal, I think. But I didn't want to take advantage of someone in a bad situation. Does that make sense? And I only bring that one up because that's one I know. I got a good deal. But would it have been possible to manipulate the situation? Yes. Do we do that? Sometimes we do. Was I tempted to see how low I could go? Yeah. But anyway, so let's not take advantage of people who are in a difficult situation. And that's what Jacob did, right? He took advantage of his brother. And it's his brother, Travis. But it does make you wonder, with all the conflict that continues. So you make a good point. Jacob knew what he was doing, right? I mean, and he's expecting later retribution because he knows this is bad. And I think sometimes, at least I do, I kind of in the past get given Jacob a pass because, well, it was promised that he was going to be over Esau. So it was promised, so this is just how it worked out. Would it worked out without him being a trickster? It still would have worked out, wouldn't it? But again, he kind of has taken it in his own hands. We've seen that before, right? God makes a promise, well, I'm going to make it happen. And that's what he's doing, and he shouldn't be admired for that. So okay, we'll move on to chapter 26. Oops, already get wrong way on the button. Genesis chapter 26, and we'll read the first five verses to start. There was a famine in the land in addition to the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, to Gerar. Yahweh appeared to him and said, "Don't go down into Egypt. Live in the land I will tell you about. Live in this land, and I will be with you and will bless you. For I will give to you and to your offspring all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swore to Abraham your father. I will multiply your offspring as the stars of the sky, and will give all these lands to your offspring. In your offspring will all the nations of the earth be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my requirements, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." So when the famine occurred in the land, God's going to tell Isaac where to go, right? So when it happens, what does God tell him? What does God tell Isaac? To go down to Egypt? Not go down to Egypt. Okay. I thought you said it right, but my ear didn't hear it. Don't go down to Egypt. Now, when we look at it, there's a famine in the land, and Isaac goes to Abimelech, and then Yahweh appeared. Did he go to Abimelech before Yahweh appeared to him? To me, it looks like he went to Abimelech, and then Yahweh says, "Don't go down to Egypt." But I can't be adamant about that, because when you look at where's he living right now? Where's Isaac living? Right here, right? Beer Lawai. And where does he go when the famine comes? Gerar. Where's Egypt? So, was he headed to Egypt? He was headed the opposite direction. So I don't know if God actually told him before he went there or if he told him when he got there. I don't know that we can tell. Wrong way. There was famine in the land. In addition, Isaac went to Abimelech. Yahweh appeared to him. It looks like he went to Gerar first to me, but regardless, God tells him, "Don't go into Egypt." Why would Isaac have needed to be told, "Don't go into Egypt"? Because where had Abraham gone during the famine? Abraham did go to Egypt, and he lived there in Egypt. So why would God want him not want him to go to Egypt? I don't know. It doesn't say. It just says he didn't want him to go to Egypt. So he's in Gerar. Why would Isaac have gone here? Did Abraham ever go there? Abraham traveled from there toward the land of the south. He lived between Kadesh and Shur. He lived as a foreigner in Gerar. So there would have been a history between Abimelech and Abraham's crew. Mason. And when he's going, I lost my place where I'm at. Okay, so and when he's going there, what is Gerar? What's that eventually going to be? They're going to be there, right? That is their land, their promised land. Is Egypt? It's not, right? So, but anyway, he tells them to go there. When Abraham went there, just to put it in a time frame, Abraham went to Egypt. There was during the famine, but he had already come up out of that. He and Lot had already separated by the time he goes to Gerar. He had already rescued Lot. And in chapter 19, where Sodom and Gomorrah are destroyed, chapter 20 is where Abraham goes to Gerar. So it's after all those events that he goes there. So Abraham is already a mighty nation, right? Or not a nation, I guess, but he's a rich man when he goes there. To where Abimelech is. So he's told, don't go there, go here. Or go to the land I tell you, which would have been, I think, the land of promise there. So why would Isaac be blessed? Why was he going to be blessed? So God tells him, you're going to be blessed because Abraham obeyed and kept my requirements, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So I'm doing this because of Abraham, and I think you're right. But now that promise is coming to you because you're now the guy, right? You now have the birthright. You now have those blessings.
The expectation to follow through.
Right. The expectation to follow through. And later we see Yahweh appeared to him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham your father. Don't be afraid, for I am with you and will bless you and multiply your offspring for my servant Abraham's sake. So again, it goes back to Abraham. So were these unconditional blessings? Was it unconditional? Mike. Live in this land, and I will do this. So it was conditional. Live in this land. So was all he had to do was live in this land? Or does that imply more? I mean, when you look at the wording, live in this land, and I'm going to give this to you. So if he had stayed there and worshipped Baal or some other idol, would that have been okay? I think it implies more than that, right? Live in this land. By living in this land, what are you doing? You're obeying me. You're choosing to follow me. You're listening to me. Mike. So I'm expecting the same thing from you as I did from Abraham. What might that have meant to Isaac? I expect you to be like Abraham. Thinking back to when Isaac would have been a young man. Good thing I have two sons. Because what was Abraham asked to do? Sacrifice Isaac. So when Isaac hears you need to obey, I wonder what's going through his mind. I wonder what he's thinking is going to be expected. But he knows how it worked out, right? He knows how it worked out. So Isaac, if he does this, does that mean he earned the promise? Again, the answer is obviously no. He didn't earn it, right? He didn't earn it at all. Okay, so we've got a few minutes left. We'll go ahead and read the text. And if you haven't noticed, we're not going to finish this lesson. And Mason pointed out last week that I left a lot of lesson one done undone as well. There's a rhyme and reason to that. So we have an extra week for review. And the last chapter of my section is also genealogies of Ishmael. I don't want to spend a whole week on that. So we will kind of overlap as we go through. We may have to speed it up as we get later, but I'm not worried about the pacing yet. Do you have something to take? Yeah, when we get to it, we're going to see that his mom definitely was a manipulator. When you think about what she's going to do to help her son, I'd be a little mad at Pam if she tried to play that off that way. I mean, but we'll get into that. And you know, we've only got a couple minutes. I'm not going to start the next section. So, Scott. Thanks for your participation, everyone.